My mother was a woman of tremendous integrity.
My mother was
curious,
sensitive,
compassionate,
honest,
always there for us,
unflappable,
loyal,
complicated.
She is devoted,
resilient,
dazzling,
giving,
vivacious,
extraordinary.
Consuelo, if you had one word to describe your mother, what would it be?
I think it's icon.
And if you had to do the same thing in Portuguese?
Papisa, which is fashion pope, you know, and the way I call her, and Mamisa, because she's Papisa for everybody else, but for me, she's Mamisa. So she's my mother pope.
Hello, and welcome to Our Mothers Ourselves. I'm Katie Hafner, and I'm your host. So what do you do if you grow up with a mother who doesn't just dress well and doesn't just have over-the-top good taste, but happens to be an international fashion icon? Do you rebel and shop at Goodwill? Do you spend your life worrying about competing with your mother? Or do you embrace it and forge an incredible bond with her and love her for what she loves and know that she loves you? I'd say that pretty well sums up the relationship between Consuelo Blocker and her mother, who's known throughout Brazil and much of the world as just Costanza. She's Brazil's Coco Chanel. She's 81 now, and she's a role model of graceful aging. Costanza lives in São Paulo, and Consuelo lives in Florence, Italy. So although mother and daughter are separated by a pandemic and a continent or two, they're in constant touch. And their relationship, oh my gosh, all I can say is that the love for life and for each other that these two women have, well, they set an example for all of us. I spoke with Consuelo recently, and our conversation started with some Portuguese. Consuelo,
I was poking around on Instagram before we started talking, and I found this wonderful conversation between you and your mom. And so you're in, it looks like it was from April, so after COVID had shut everybody in. And I love this so much. I don't speak a word of Portuguese, but I was completely...
Yeah, that's what I was asking myself. I was like, how could you have figured out what we were talking about?
Yeah, I'm going to play this little bit that's so animated between the two of you. And I just want you to translate it after I play it.
Bem apertadinhos, daí você baixa um pouco, né? Porque... Pessoal, eu vou contar uma parêntese. A Costanza, assim, essa coisa do lavar o cabelo foi a primeira grande obstáculo prático, tá? A gente não vai falar aqui de coisa muito triste, porque não é o caso e não somos especialistas nisso. Mas então a gente vai falar da nossa experiência. Então foi essa coisa de lavar o cabelo que para ela era um problema. Por exemplo, eu comprei os bobs 15 minutos da... E isso tudo dançando com música latino-americana. Yes! Muito bom. Pra
só
esse,
você, mami. Só é, você.
Bem, eu queria divertir meus netos.
Ok, so what, não, mas, what were you guys talking about?
This is amazing. It's such a fun part of the conversation. So, and this talk that we had was our first live together after the quarantine lockdown started. Italy, no, you were not supposed to leave your house unless you were going to the pharmacy or to get food. And you could walk dogs for an hour a day or have exercise for an hour a day around your house. That was all you could do. So we were talking about how I had to convince her that for her health, she had to quarantine herself, and which she was fine with. But there were things that she does that she didn't want to give up. And one of them was to have a hairdresser come to the house and do her hair. She has back problems, so it's really hard. And I never had thought of that, you know, for her to like hold a hair dryer and set her hair, you know.
I would love to hear about Dona Gabriela, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Let's set the scene here for your mother's childhood.
Just to give a background, my mother is kind of an icon at the moment through a lot of what she did in her life, you know.
So she was born in Italy. What year was she born and where?
39 in Siena. So 39 was the beginning of the war, Second World War. And so she was born right after the war started. And after the war ended, my grandfather tried to work in Italy, but there weren't too many opportunities. So my grandmother decided to move to Brazil, where, because at the time you can imagine that South America was, and even I think the States, was, you know, opportunity land.
In 1940?
I think it's 6, 7. I can't remember. But it's a few years after the war ended.
And then they started the textile business.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it was your grandmother who was the main force behind it. Is that right?
Well, she was definitely the image of the business, the force behind the business, and the creative side. But, you know, without my grandfather doing all the administrative side, it wouldn't have worked. But yes, driving force.
So tell me about her, about Dona Gabriela, and what. And
she was a beautiful woman. She was a feminist before the theme, the name even existed. And also, when the war in some ways broke my grandfather, who was an idealist, she, you know, put all the pieces together and said, okay, this is what we're going to do, and convinced him that they had to go to Brazil. And once they were there, they had to build a life again. And, you know, she had this idea of starting with a textile factory because they found some silk that was in a stock abandoned, and they bought it for a good price and started from there. She noticed also that people wanted to decorate their homes, and there was no beautiful silk fabric to decorate homes. So she started there. And then Dior came out with a new look where people needed so much fabric to do a skirt. And she saw that opportunity too. And she started doing textiles for clothing. And and then the rest is history. But she was always a very strong and beautiful woman, and a matriarch for sure.
Tell me about your mother's childhood with a mom like that, and your mother. I want to hear about your mother's sense of style and how it developed when she was a small child.
So my grandmother and my mother, they're both very strong characters and free spirit. And so there were clashes growing up. My grandmother wanted my mother to fit in a mold, which she didn't completely fit.
Well, how would you describe the mold that your grandmother wanted your mother to fit into?
I think, you know, the good woman, a good woman in the, this would have been late 50s, early 60s, you know, that behaved, and that studied, went through school, graduated, and had a good marriage within probably the Italian community or something like that. But my mother, instead, they had the uniform for school. It was Catholic school. So my mother, like, made all sorts of things. She would roll her waistband so that the skirt was really short. And then she'd worked with her. They had, I think, like, high socks. And I don't know what she did with those, like, made them shorter. And then she just told me that she would get the chalk from, you know, the chalkboards, and work it with water and kind of make it a cool makeup on her face. And she didn't study, and she never graduated high school because at the end she pretended she was in class and she wasn't. So my mother was a rebel. You know, that's why I also think that she works so well with fashion, because she understands behavior.
So there she was shortening her skirts in her Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And so she must have developed a sense of her own sense of style very early.
Oh, yes. It's like when she was a young girl, my grandmother always had clothes made. You know, at the time, that's how it worked. You know, prêt-à-porter started much later, before you had your clothes made with a seamstress, right? So she would take my mother also to make her little clothes. And my mother would go nuts if the length of her dress was not exactly like she wanted it. But she must have been 6 at the time. Her sense of style started way back.
What do you know about her years when she first met your dad and what that was like? And was it all very cosmopolitan? They were living in São Paulo, I take it.
Yes. And they met at a party, And I remember her saying that when he was in the beginning of his career at Chase Manhattan Banks in South America, he was the head of it. And when he talked to my mother and he said, "We at the bank," and she thought this "we" sounded so, as you said, you know, sophisticated and cosmopolitan. She fell for him. They married in 6 months. And I think they loved each other, but they were also perfectly aligned at the time. My father, you know, in the beginning of his profession, and she was, I think, the perfect wife for his job as much as a wife for his life. And my mother, she has this free spirit, and she, with my father, she was able, you know, her world widened because it wasn't only the Italian community in Brazil, which is very large, but at the same time, she could, you know, free, leave the home and everything. So I think they had a great time, and they would go often to New York. And my mother tells a story that's fantastic. They were in New York, and my father had some business meetings, and she was shopping. And my grandmother had asked her to buy a fur coat. And she buys this fur coat, and the beginning of miniskirts. This was beginning of the 60s. So she buys a miniskirt, and they were going to have lunch with my father's colleagues. And so she walks into the restaurant, and my father helps her out of her coat. And when he sees that she has a miniskirt on, he puts the coat back on her. And she says, "You're going to keep this coat."
He made her keep the coat on throughout the lunch. That's very funny.
You know, mini skirts were a big revolution at the time.
So they had you, how old was your mom when she had you?
25.
Young.
Mm-hmm, I think so. But I think at the time it was less young than today.
And you have a sister who's older or younger?
She's younger. So mm-hmm. My mother would have been like 27 when she mm-hmm. When my mom left, and she started working in fashion. She started working in magazines, and then she got into fashion magazine. And she...
When you say that she left, was that when she and your dad separated?
Yes, because she fell in love with someone else. And it's like she kind of went on a vacation and never came back. And so I think she had told my father that she had fell in love with someone else. And so he said, "Okay, I'll send you on a vacation so you can forget him in Europe." We were in Brazil. And when she went to Europe, her lover met her there. The day she was supposed to come back, my father went to the airport and she wasn't there. And supposedly, you know, he went for 2 or 3 days and she was never there. So they put a detective on her. And then they found out that she was, with her lover in Europe, and didn't know how to come back, how to tell people that it would be real, that she would have to leave home and all of that. So for us daughters, we thought she was dead because nobody told us what was going on. And we had, it was so odd. Maybe it was somehow we felt it, but we knew the number of days she had to be away. And we had heard of this thing that you put beans in a glass for the number of days and you take one for every day that goes by, and the beans ended and she didn't come back. So we kind of built a little shrine around the picture that she had at home and prayed for her, knowing that she was dead in our heads, you know. And when she showed up, it was amazing. But she showed up for a day. She showed up with a small suitcase, and I thought that was odd. And she came to say that she wasn't coming back to live with us. And so that was heart-wrenching. And we lived with my father, I think, another 5 years. And then we moved to live with her. They realized that maybe for two girls, it was better to live close to the mother.
How old were you when all of this happened?
I think I was about 8. And then I moved again to live with her. I was about 13.
Did she seem torn apart that she wouldn't be with you girls, or was she so in love with this?
I mean, she suffered a lot. She didn't expect to be separated from us. Divorces are always awful, but when it wasn't the norm, it was, I think, pretty hard also because, I mean, she didn't know what to do. And she lived in another city, but she came every weekend and we saw her every weekend. And then, but it was right to move back to her. I think it was good. For me, it was, I was happy to be close to my mother at 13, because it's an odd age. She's a beautiful woman. She has always been. But she separated from my father when relatively young, at about 35, 36, I think, and created a career out of having been ostracized from society, having been cut off of any money.
Did she marry this person who she found?
They never officially married, but they lived together for, I think, 20 years. And then he died in her arms. So a heart attack. And they were at the hospital because he felt bad. And so they were waiting to have tests, you know, taken. And he got up and just kind of like as if he fainted. So he held on to him so he wouldn't fall on the floor. And immediately people, he was in the hospital. There were, you know, nurses and doctors all around. They ran to him, but he couldn't be saved.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. True love story, right? Could do an opera out of it.
I'm sure that he was the love of her life.
Yeah, she does say that.
And so she must have been...
She suffered a lot for a long time. She says she never found sleep, you know, easy sleep again. She felt his absence. And every once in a while, she says he comes to visit. She feels his presence.
So has she found some happiness?
She had other very important relationship. Then I think around 70, she said that her hormones had gone on vacation, on permanent vacation, and that's when she stopped having relationships. And she's very happy this way.
Mm-hmm. And what is your first memory of, okay, this is a mother with style?
Oh, what a great question. You know, nobody has ever asked me this. Like, I don't know when I understood that her style was better than others. I just thought she was beautiful. It's funny because the whole household, it was important for everybody the way that we appeared. My grandfather never saw him without a coat. My grandmother was always perfectly coiffed and dressed, and her bag matched her shoes, and she had pearls. And my father had all his suits and shirts made in England. Even our nanny, who was my mom's nanny and came over from Europe with her and then became our nanny, never left the house without hairspray and pearls and lipstick. So for me, just being well presented was something that was just the way it was. When my mom left and she started working in fashion, she started working in magazines, and then she got into fashion magazine, and she...
Is this the magazine Claudia? Is that
exactly. Mm-hmm. But it was the Claudia Moda fashion that came out twice a year, and she transformed it to, like, I think 10 or 12 times a year, something like that. So then when that, and also fashion was starting in Brazil, you didn't have fashion brands at the time. So we started talking about fashion as fashion, you know, and that's when I started noticing how she dressed well. Maybe a better story is when I went to college in the States, and as much as I went to always American schools, moving to the States, I wanted to be accepted. And my mother comes to visit me for the first time. I went to Brown in Rhode Island. She's coming from New York by train. And I asked her, you know, before hanging up, I said, oh, and mommy, would you mind coming dressed up as a mother? And she was like, silence. And then she said, what kind of mom do you want? You know, like Ralph Lauren, Calvin Klein. I said, anything a little more traditional, not so Japanese. And so there I arrived, you know, at the train station in Providence. And she had this, she was all dressed in Japanese. And she had this big black cape, Yoji Yamamoto cape, that she just flings over herself. She told me later, and she said, the best message I could give you was be yourself. And I was being myself, and I came dressed just like I dress. And because half hour later, she was sitting on my bed and mending my socks. So, you know, she still was my mom, but she was herself.
I love this woman.
Yeah.
I'm getting some serious mom envy.
But you're not the only one, I can guarantee you. But somehow now, you know, I've become this influencer, and it's odd that there are not many older influencers in Brazil. So people have been noticing, not only me, but just this whole 50 plus is a big deal now in the world, but in Brazil.
Yeah. And one thing you said to me that really got me wondering a little bit more is you said that the 50 plus movement in Brazil is very big. And I bet your mom has turned into something of an icon for graceful aging.
Yes, that has been for a while. And she definitely is.
Let's put her into some context for American listeners. She's been called the Pope of Fashion.
Right. In Brazil, yeah.
And is there an American equivalent to
Costanza? Well, people try to say, you know, like Diana Vreeland, or because it's more of a style than a power thing. Because if we go talk about Anna Wintour, she has some style, but she has more power. Diana Vreeland had more, I think, style than power. So I think she would be like that kind of an icon, but very active in everything fashion in Brazil.
And what about the family business?
Well, she did work there for a long time, and she still gives some input, but the family business stayed more with her brother.
And what would you say, does she have sort of a fashion motif?
Yes. She said that around, I think it was about when she was 70-something, she said, okay, posture is changing, hair is changing, skin, everything. I have to make a statement. And her style is, it starts with the hair, you know, this puffy hair that now has white hair in the front and darker in the back. And then she has big, they're not really sunglasses, they're degradé, so they're dark on top and then they're lighter, lighter. Very thick eyeliner. She has a very prominent nose. Then she plays with accessories, especially earrings. And she will wear something large on top, like either a coat, very well cut coat, or a wide sweater or a wide t-shirt, and then big bracelets, low heels, you know, flat shoes, and thin pants. And so that she might change colors, her coat might have very large embroidery, her accessories might be more, are always very big and signature, like statement pieces. But the glasses, eyeliner, earrings, and the hair are her definitely a way to recognize her.
Well, everything about her is exquisite. And did you, as you were growing up, did you think, okay, I don't want to get lost in her style. I want to break out with my own.
Well, my preoccupation, you know, the thing I was most worried about wasn't finding a style, but finding a voice or an individuality.
I see.
Yes, because not only my mom was very strong, but my father was very successful and my mother very successful. So at the beginning, when I was very young, I thought, well, I will never be as successful as them, but let's see where life will take me. So I think when I was young, I think I gained a lot of weight so that I wouldn't compete with her, because people could say, otherwise, people would say, oh, the mother's prettier than she is. So if I was fat, people would say, oh, okay, she's fat. They wouldn't even compare. So I think I did that on purpose, although it was psychological. You know, I wasn't very aware of that. Then I think I went to study in the States because I liked it, and it was a great opportunity, but also it was a place where I was more anonymous. And then I moved to Italy for love and I stayed here. But I worked at the factory, the family business. So of course it was an invitation to be compared to my mother. But eventually when I found the social media and the blogging, that was when I realized that I had a chance to have my voice. And in the process, I also developed a style of my own.
Well, if I venture to observe what I see as the difference between your style and hers is that yours seems a little more, almost a softer style.
More sporty?
Yes, a slightly sportier, softer, a little bit flowier.
Yeah, it could be. It depends on how the weight, you know, because I do gain and lose weight very often. I just lost something like 25 pounds during the quarantine. Nothing too tight on, but I will wear some nice blazers on top of pieces that are more casual. I do wear a lot of flat shoes, and I do play a lot with accessories.
So when you were growing up, did you sort of worry sometimes about, and when you were a young woman developing your own sense of style, did you worry how your mom would react to what you were wearing? Did she react or say anything or judge you in any way when you gained a lot of weight?
Oh, that bothered her a lot for a while, but she tried to be correct about it, but it did bother her a bit. But I remember the only time that she really said no, but I was really small. I must have been 6. There was this singer that was very famous at the time, and she wore white vinyl boots that went all the way to the knees. And I said, "Mom, I want white boots that go to the knees with a zipper on the side." And she was like, every time I said, you know, white boots, her eyes opened. At that point, she said, "No.
These boots are made for walking. And that's just what they
are." I heard her say no. I think she always respected my style, but she always liked it too. And I will call her and say, "Do you like this? Do you think this is cool?" You know, I feel very confident with my style right now. And I don't need her to accept it, but I do like her approval. And because I also want to see through her eyes if the style is not only nice to me but also to an other set of trained eyes.
Mm-hmm. And does she always tell you the truth?
Yes, she might be diplomatic, but she does say the truth. Yeah.
So what does she say to you about the aging process?
I mean, I think she passed on something that I always try to pass on in my media, which is that every phase of life is fascinating for different reasons. You cannot live all of them together. It's a process. And it's very sad if you don't accept it, because aging, I find it beautiful. You know, I think I love feeling so much more secure than I did at 20. And I miss my kids terribly because they don't live with me anymore. They already left. But the independence is wonderful. You know, I'm the owner of my time and started this, which today can be called a business, you know, the social media, the influencer field. So what she did teach me is to, but not through words, but through behavior, is just to always be curious and always be aware and listen to all generations and learn from all of them, you know, and that there's wisdom also in the young. And you cannot maintain yourself modern if you don't listen to the young. The way young people look at life and at new things is very important to listen to, you know, and to adapt to what you know. You're not going to be young again, but you have to be aware, you know, of what's going on.
It sounds like your mother has done that mm-hmm. as well. Consuelo, what would you say your mother's legacy is and will be?
Wow. Could inspiration for a whole bunch of women be a legacy also?
I think so.
More than anything concrete.
Here's another prompt for you is, if you had one word to describe your mother, what would it be?
I think it's an icon.
And if you had to do the same thing in Portuguese?
Papisa, which is fashion pope, you know. And the way I call her, and Mamisa, because she's Papisa for everybody else, but for me, she's Mamisa. So she's my mother pope.
I love that. Well, on that note, when is the last time you saw her? This is sad.
This is very sad. It was in January. We saw each other in New York. And I was leaving for Brazil in March when there was the lockdown. And I was starting to think of coming again to Brazil. Because I used to, you know, last year I went 7 times to Brazil in a year. But she says she doesn't want me there now because she's been, you know, on lockdown. Because when I go, I live in her apartment, in her house. And not that she doesn't want me, but it would be dangerous if I came. I could, you know, to stay in her house. It might put her in danger. So we have to wait for the vaccine until I go to her house.
Well, this has been so much fun. I want to thank you so much for doing this.
No, I want to thank you, Katie. This was so incredible. Just to, you know, the questions were very interesting.
And that's it this week for Our Mothers Ourselves. Before we go, one more thing. We've just started dipping our toes into partnerships with companies that make stuff we love. So, as befits an episode that's about the world of personal beauty, this week we're starting a partnership with a brand new company based in Portland, Oregon, called See My Toes. I've never polished my fingernails, and I mean, not once, but I'm a toe polish fanatic, and I just discovered a brand new non-toxic polish called See My Toes. The colors are great, and the polish has a super shiny, hard top coat that makes it extra hard to chip. One of the things I like about this line is that it's 10-free. That means it doesn't have any of the odious chemicals like formaldehyde. The folks at See My Toes have created a great fund to give back, and they have polish colors named for the organizations they give to. For instance, Wildwood Trail is the color named for the Forest Park Conservancy in Portland, and as you can imagine, it's a deep chocolate brown. So we're offering all Our Mothers Ourselves listeners 20% off your entire purchase. Just go to seemytoes.com and use the code OMO20 at checkout. That's seemytoes.com and the code is OMO20. Our theme music is composed and performed by Andrea Perry. Paula Mangin is our artist in residence. Our intern is Rosie Manick and the show's producer is Alice Hudson. Our Mothers Ourselves is a production of Odradex Studios. I'm Katie Hafner, and I'm your host. Have a great week, everyone, and vote as if your life depended on it.